Hi, I'm the bit before the bit before the theme music. Yes, normally we have a bit before the theme music, but today we've got a bit before the bit before the theme music. So this is me, the bit before the theme music. Let's run the bit before the theme music. Hi, I'm the bit before the theme music. Thanks to the bit before the theme music. I appreciate that. Now I'm the bit before the theme music. Run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, says he, my trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
I'm a cheap, lying, no good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood-sucking, dog-kissing, brainless, dickless, hopeless, heartless, fat-ass, bug-eyed, stiff-legged, spotty-lipped, worm-headed sack of monkey shit he is!
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. Let's do the interactive bit. Have you put your Christmas tree up yet? Oh, I see. And scene. Well done, everyone. So I played the whole extended bit of the theme music there from the previous episode. I did that as a personal favour to one of my dear listeners, Mr. Barry Grapefruit. He put, I was stuck in traffic tonight and ran out of things to listen to, so I pulled up your latest episode. I must grudgingly admit that it was more enjoyable than listening to the sound of horns honking around me and police sirens going by. Hear that, boys and girls? High praise indeed for my show. I won't say it was good, but since I had literally nothing else I could do with my time, it didn't feel like as much of a waste of my life as usual. Again, high praise. Huh? And then he's put, please keep the Clark Griswold introduction. It's a spot-on description of you. Again, high praise. Oh, no, maybe not. Anyway, good to hear from you, Barry, and I appreciate the feedback. Now, also, boys and girls, I don't know if you remember, but when I was chatting to Jeannie Mulligan about Christmas in Ireland, one of the things we discussed was Christmas FM, which is a radio show that runs from late November all the way up till Christmas. And they play Christmas tunes and it raises money for charity and people send in their messages and they get read out. Well, as I'm recording this, the same day, it's the 29th of November, I got an email from Jeannie saying, oh, you know, Christmas FM's going, you should send in a message and get them to read it out. So that was this morning. So I sent them a message at about 8 in the morning, just saying, you know, I'd like to wish my two daughters, Robin and Juno, a Merry Christmas from Dad Jack and Mum Carla. And sadly, I wasn't listening to it, but they read out my message. Yeah, I'm quite chuffed with that. So if you want to listen to Christmas FM, it's very easy, boys and girls. You just go to christmasfm.com and you can listen online. Listen on your phone, listen how you want. I don't care. Just as long as you listen, I'm happy. If you'd been listening today, you would have heard my message, which I didn't hear. I think what's cool about that is you're guaranteed non-stop Christmas music, and it's not just your playlist. So I've got a playlist, and it's got possibly 100 songs on it, and I know them all. Whereas if you're listening to the radio, you might get the odd song that you're not familiar with, or a version of a song that you've not heard before. So yeah, there you go, Christmas FM. It's based in Ireland, but you can listen to it all around the world. And thanks to Jeannie for bringing that to my attention. She should be on either in the next episode or the episode after that, where we're going to be talking about her Crimbo Sambo competition, which is where she judges the best Christmas sandwiches. Now, I'm pretty sure I've got other stuff that I should be talking about, but I can't think what they are, so let's get on with this.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Boys and girls, this episode's version of A Christmas Carol is one that I'm familiar with, but I'd never seen before. Now, this was released in cinemas in 2001, and it's actually called A Christmas Carol the Movie, as opposed to all those other movie versions, which are just called A Christmas Carol. Now, it's an animated version, and it was directed by a chap called Jimmy T. Murakami. Now, he has got form, because he directed, are you ready for this, drumroll please, The Snowman, yeah, He's also done other stuff. He did Battle Beyond the Stars, and he also directed a segment for Heavy Metal, which is a really popular animated film from the 70s. So with that pedigree, we know we're in for a real treat, or so you'd think. Now, the screenplay was written by a chap called Piet Kroon and Robert Llewellyn. Now, you might know Robert Llewellyn if you're a fan of Red Dwarf, if you've ever watched Red Dwarf. I used to be a huge fan of Red Dwarf when I was younger. He plays Crichton the robot in that. Yeah. And to be honest, Robert Llewellyn and Piet Kroon should be ashamed of themselves. I'm not kidding. They should be ashamed of themselves. This isn't A Christmas Carol, the movie. It is some weird bastardised version of A Christmas Carol. So the version I watched on YouTube has actually got a bit missing, because when it was released in cinemas, it had a bit at the start and a bit at the end that were live action. And these two bits are set in 1857 in Boston. Now, I managed to find them on a separate clip on YouTube. And you've got Simon Callow. He's the one who plays Scrooge. He's also playing Charles Dickens in this. And it sort of follows him as he goes on stage to read A Christmas Carol. That's how it starts. Now, Simon Callow has got a lot of history with Dickens and Scrooge. He's played Charles Dickens in a couple of episodes of Doctor Who. He's also got a movie-length reading of A Christmas Carol, where he reads the book. And he also played Dickens in a couple of other things as well that I saw online, which I'd never seen or heard of before. Now, I'm going to go through the start of this film, because the start of it is very different to the book, and there's a good segment of maybe 20-odd minutes which is added story that isn't in the book. So here we go. It starts off with Scrooge, and he's buying a load of bad debts off for a gentleman called Mr. Leech, and the gentleman hands over these sheets of paper to Scrooge. There's a lot of cuts, I've got to warn you of that. Then it cuts to this hospital, and there's a bunch of kids in a hospital room feeding a mouse. Okay, apparently the mouse is called Gabriel. Then it cuts back to Scrooge, and he hands this ledger, like a book. Before it was papers, he bought the papers, now they're in a book. I don't know if he's transferred them, I don't know what's going on, to a chap called Old Joe, and now Old Joe's going to deal with all those debts. Then we've got Scrooge walking down the street, and he shoves some blind bloke out of the way, which is really kind of him. Then it cuts to some bailiffs that are with Old Joe, and they're taking people off to debtor's prison, going, oh, you ain't paid your debts, come to prison with us, we'll take you there, we'll give you a free lift, which is nice of them, I suppose, giving them a free, I don't have to pay for the lift, that's handy. Then we see Scrooge in his office, right, and get this, he sees a mouse. Do you know what he does? He smiles, chuckles, and feeds the effing thing. I'm not joking, I couldn't be more annoyed about this. Yeah, he feeds it a little blob of cheese. What is that about? I've seen other versions where Scrooge has got a dog. That annoys me. This annoys me even more, because now he's feeding blooming vermin and he's happy. He loves this bloody mouse. Madness. Then it cuts back to the hospital, and it turns out one of the patients was Tiny Tim, but he's okay to go home now. And we find out that Belle is the nurse that runs the hospital. Yeah, Belle, you remember from the book, Scrooge's girlfriend from all those years ago. And we also find out that the hospital was broke, and a bunch of bailiffs come in just after Tiny Tim's left, and they take away the doctor, saying, you ain't paid your loans, mush. Get in the back of the car. Again, he gets a free lift, so that's not too bad. Then Belle goes to see Mr. Leech, who originally they owed the debt to, and he's like, yeah, I'm really sorry, I've transferred the debts to Scrooge. And Belle's like, I know him. So she sits down and writes a letter to Scrooge. Then she sends that off. At this point, can I say, I've got to rattle through this because we'll be here all day. So then she takes the letter to Scrooge. Scrooge isn't there, but this bit, I'd like to say this annoyed me the most, but so many bits annoyed me the most. That bit with the mice earlier, but this bit, really annoying, right? Cratchit is a bit of an arsehole to her. She's like, oh, I've got this letter from Scrooge. And Cratchit's all like, oh, he's very busy. He's like a real lickspittle type. He's not the character we know, this humble, friendly man. He's like, yeah, Mr. Scrooge is busy. He probably won't have time to read your letter. And then he's a bit like, and if you owe us money, the terms are all in the agreement. And then he's like, you know, I think you should leave. And he gets rid of her. And I'm thinking, Cratchit, you really are a bit of a dick. You've let me down, Cratchit. Sort of missed something, actually. So Rhys Ivans plays Cratchit. You might know Rhys Ivans. He was in Notting Hill, been in a lot of other crap. He was also the Lizard in The Amazing Spider-Man. So yeah, he's done quite a lot. And Belle is played by Kate Winslet. Yeah, and I remember when I first saw this, like I saw a trailer for it or something, and I remember thinking, the animation looks a little bit naff. What's Kate Winslet doing, giving her voice to that? And this is not long after Titanic, so she's at the height of her fame, and she's given a voice to this naff thing. Anyway, then Belle goes to see the doctor, who's in debtor's prison, which is interesting. I'm guessing this all happened on the same day, and he's been taken to prison. She can already go and visit him, so that's nice. And she's saying, you know, don't worry, I used to have a bit of a thing with Scrooge. I reckon I might be able to weasel my way around him. Then we see Scrooge walking through the street, and at this point it does sort of match up with the book, because he pushes past a lot of carol singers, and then he sees Fred. And he talks to Fred on the doorstep. Yeah, it's actually outside his office. And they have their conversation. The dialogue is not very similar to the book, really, at all. Then he goes in the office and he starts talking to Cratchit about people saying Merry Christmas. And he does the old line about should be boiled with his own pudding. Well, I thought, that's a line you give to Fred. Why are you giving it to Cratchit? Why have they done this? Why, oh why? Now then, Fred has sort of said to the carol singers, here, go and sing a song for Scrooge. So these carol singers are all standing outside the window, singing at the top of their voices. Scrooge gets a bucket of water and chucks it over them. But it mainly all goes over this poor little kid. This poor little kid, it's only blooming Tiny Tim, isn't it? Yeah, he's soaked to the bone in the middle of freezing cold winter. To be honest, he just got out of hospital. I don't know if he should be at carol singing in his state, but there you go. Then we've got these mice again, and they're pissing about. And this is the last time I'm going to talk about these mice, because I don't see the point of them. It makes no sense, but they're throughout it a lot. They're not really important to the storyline, but they keep popping up and crawling over people's shoulders. They don't talk, they just squeak, but they're very animated and very annoying. I'm not going to mention them again. Oh, and also, I didn't bother mentioning this, but in the live action bit, they've got like two little computer generated mice running around. They've even got the mice in the live action bit. I don't know why. None of this makes sense. Right, at this point, let's just have a little bit of the dialogue so you can see how different it is to the book. Have a listen to this.
I suppose you want me to pay you for tomorrow as well. 2 and 6 to stay at home and be idle.
Well, sir, it does come once a year, sir. Thank you, Mr. Scrooge, sir. And a Merry Christmas. Sorry, sir. Thank you, sir.
I want you back here extra early the day after to make up for lost time.
Yes, sir. Of course, sir.
So Bob's gone home, then the clocks start going doolally. This is all in the office now. The clocks start going doolally, and in comes Jacob Marley. And he's really ghostly. It is proper like a ghost. It's always changing shape, and it's sort of getting larger and then smaller. I didn't mind the way they did that. I didn't love it. And the person who does the voice of Jacob Marley is Nicolas Cage. And this isn't Nicolas Cage now, who refuses to turn down any acting role he's offered. This is Nicolas Cage of 1999, only a couple of years after he'd won his Oscar. Yeah, I don't know why he's there, but he's there. They have their chat. It's an interesting bit because the whole time it's like these chains of his are like trying to drag him out the window while he's trying to talk to Scrooge. Eventually he just gets dragged out and he goes up into the sky, and there's all these other ghosts that look a bit like him. They all sort of get dragged off together by their chains, and Scrooge is watching. So then Scrooge is going to leave, and at this point he meets the portly gentleman just as he's closing his office. So he's going around closing all the doors, and they're like talking to him, how much money do you want to give? I'm not giving you nothing, am I? The usual bit. And then they all leave onto the street and he walks off. And then he cuts back to Bob Cratchit, and he's on the ice slide having a bit of fun, and that's just outside his house. And he goes in and he's there with the family, and they play a game, which is mentioned in the book. So it's like they have actually at some points tried to follow the book, but very loosely, I think. Then we get Belle with all the sick kids in the hospital. Don't know why they've cut to that, just to show us the kids are sick. Well, we know they're sick, they're in hospital. Then it's back to Scrooge, and we get Marley's face on the door knocker. It's like, look, you've already seen Marley. This should have been before. I don't know why they changed the order of things, and it really annoyed me, because he's just seen Jacob Marley, and then he sees the portly gentleman. That really winds me up. So then Scrooge is eating his gruel and he shares it with this mouse. I said I wasn't going to talk about the mice anymore. I blooming did, didn't I? And at this point, we're 30 minutes in. It's only 90 minutes, the whole thing anyway. So 30 minutes of it, and we haven't even got to the first ghost yet. Well, now we're going to. The Ghost of Christmas Past turns up, and it looks the part. It's not exactly like it's described in the book, but to have it look exactly like it's described in the book, pretty tricky. This one actually looks quite similar to the Jim Carrey version. Yeah, it's got like a candle flame to his head, and it's got generally the face of a child, and then every so often, it's got the face of an old person, and it goes back to looking like a child again. So they go to the school, and he's there crying, and then it's a few years later, he's crying again. Is he? I don't know. And Fan turns up this time, and she's like, come on, let's get in the carriage. They get in the carriage. Who's in the carriage? It's only Belle, isn't it? She's already in there. She's getting into this story pretty early on. Turns out she's mates with Fan, isn't she? So then they've added this bit. He goes home for Christmas and his dad's there going, yeah, you're going to work, son. Off you go. And he sends him to work. Where does he work? Fezziwigs. So then we cut to the party at Fezziwigs, and who should be invited to the party but his sister Fan. Yeah, you know, because you can invite a friend. Well, not only has Scrooge invited his sister's invited Belle. Yeah, she's come along. Well, she can't seem to keep away, can she? At this point, so I forgot the voices. So the Ghost of Christmas Past is voiced by Jane Horrocks. You might know her. Her most famous role was probably Bubble in Absolutely Fabulous. She also starred in a film called Little Voice with Michael Caine. And Fan is played by Kate Winslet's sister, Beth Winslet. Then we've got lots of dancing. And as they're leaving, Scrooge gets in the carriage with Belle. And she says this.
I want you to be able to do whatever you want.
And all I would want to do is dream of you, Ebenezer. Just dream.
Yeah, I just want to dream of you. It's not like I want to be with you, I just want to dream of you. Well, you can dream with me without even being with me. I could go out to someone else and you can go and sit in your room and dream. What's that all about? Just say I want to be with you. It's really badly written. And while this is all going on, Scrooge is talking to the Ghost of Christmas Past, and twice he mentions that Belle's dad liked to drink. Twice he mentions that. I mean, there's no follow-up to it anyway, but twice he mentions that Belle's dad likes to drink. If I was the Ghost of Christmas Past, I'd be like, all right, mate, we get it. You think her dad's an alkie? Move on. Then they've added this bit. Scrooge's dad is passed away, and I guess his mum was already gone, I don't know. And they're reading out the will, and it all goes to Ebenezer, because apparently Scrooge's dad wasn't keen on Fan's husband, right? And Scrooge says this.
What was I to do? Split the inheritance with that reckless charlatan, husband of her whom my father had disowned?
Yes, Scrooge. That's exactly what you should have done, you tight git. It's not as if you ain't got enough money anyway. Goodness me. She's actually pregnant in this bit, Fan is, as she's walking out of the office, having received nothing from her dad or her brother. Then we've got Belle and Scrooge, and this is the bit where they're breaking up. And the reason they're breaking up is he wants her to sign a prenup. Yeah, a contract. I don't know if they had prenups back in Victorian times, but Scrooge wants her to sign one. I'll tell you that for nothing. Then we've got the Ghost of Christmas Present. The Ghost of Christmas Present is played by Michael Gambon, and he also played a version of Scrooge in one of the Doctor Who Christmas specials. And I'm actually going to be on the Advent Calendar House podcast in a couple of weeks talking about that version of A Christmas Carol. But right now we're talking about this one. The Ghost of Christmas Present and Scrooge go flying out of his bedroom, and it's like a real trippy sequence, and I don't like it at all. It's like in the book where they're going around the town and he's shaking his horn and the Christmas spirit's sprinkling down on people and sorting out arguments. And there's a scene that's in the book where there's two men arguing in the street, and also we see like miners and people working out at sea and in a lighthouse. They fly through all these places, but it's filmed like almost like a music video, like really trippy, and I don't like that at all. It really takes you out of it, as if it's not actually happening, as if it's almost like it's a concept rather than it actually happened. And that bothers me. I don't like that. Then they go to Fred's and listen to this version of 20 Questions.
Is it animal, vegetable or mineral?
You can't answer that, dear. Only yes and no questions. That's the game.
Is it animal, Fred?
Yes. Is it a duck with one leg?
It is an old goat.
Young fool. Is it Father Time?
I know. It's Uncle Scrooge.
Yes.
What was that? Like, what? Less than 30 seconds? Add another 10 seconds and you could have at least made it sound like, you know, Scrooge is a git. As it stands, it's just Scrooge is just a thing. Really rubbish that was. Then the Ghost of Christmas Present takes them to Old Joe and the bailiffs, just showing the nasty side of what's going on at Christmas, which isn't in the book at all. In the book, it's all positive stuff. Then it goes to the Cratchits, and they change the order here because in the book, it's the Cratchits, then Fred's. And they've got this quite a decent-sized turkey, pretty big. Mrs. Cratchit, who's played by a lady called Juliet Stevenson. She's a very famous British actor. Can't really name much she's been in, though. She was in a film in the 90s called Truly, Madly, Deeply with Alan Rickman, but other than that, I can't really think of it. Anyway, she brings out this turkey and she says, yeah, it was a bargain at 6 shillings. I'm thinking, 6 shillings? Bob only earns 15 shillings a week. So that's like 40% of his weekly income on that blooming turkey. Seems like quite a lot to me. They're sat at the table and Tim, who's just got out of hospital, is sick again. Have a listen to this.
He's kept me employed for almost 14 years. We should be grateful.
He put this remarkable bird on our table.
He threw a bucket of freezing water on our Tim, that's what he did. No wonder the poor child's pneumonia's back. There, I said it.
Yeah, that's no good. Then she brings out the massive pudding. Now, I'm guessing there was a big cut where they actually had a chance to eat their first meal, because this is only like a minute later after she's brought the turkey out. Then it's the pudding. It's huge, this pudding. Really big. Then the Ghost of Christmas Present leaves as Scrooge is going, will the child live? And the Ghost of Christmas Present is saying, I can't answer that. And is replaced by the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. Now, this bit, again, is quite trippy. Every scene is all like mist and shrouded. And it's like Scrooge is walking around in the mist. And then he just sort of sees shadows of events that are going on. And the ghost is quite spooky, actually. It's like a really drawn skeleton in robes. Yeah, this is one of the more creepy versions of the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come that I've seen. First, they're at the Cratchits, and Tiny Tim has passed away. Then we get the two blokes in the street. They've completely changed the dialogue. It's only one of the two conversations that we see in the book. I'll play that for you.
At last. A long time coming and no mistake.
Good riddance, I say.
Will you attend?
Attend? I will attend the tavern and drink to a happier and more just world.
Then they go to Old Joe's, and you've got the three people that have taken their stuff to get some money off Old Joe, and Old Joe's doing a voiceover, which continues as Scrooge goes to the bedchamber and sees the body on the bed, which he's too scared to lift the cloth back on. Then we see Belle crying, right, because she's found out that someone's passed away. But the doctor comes running in, the one we mentioned earlier that was in debtor's prison. He comes running in and he's happy as Larry, going, hey, I'm out of prison because he's dead, isn't it brilliant? And they're like hugging while Belle's still crying because Scrooge has died. Some bloke she went out with 30 or 40 odd years ago. And at this point, the doctor actually mentions that it's Scrooge that has passed away. So Scrooge realises that it's him who's died. And then he sees his gravestone. Again, this is all enshrouded in mist. And he sees Cratchit crying at another gravestone. And Scrooge starts reaching in his pockets and just throwing money at Cratchit, going, here you go. I'm doing my best to help. Yeah, my son's dead, mate. Throwing me £5 ain't going to help much. And then Marley turns up again, because, you know, we've paid to have Nick Cage here. We might as well get him back in. And pretty much he just comes over and he's like, I told you so. And him and all his ghostly mates float off with Scrooge. And then Scrooge wakes up in bed. Yeah. Then he goes out of the window and there's a kid on the street. Have a listen to this.
Oh, I say, what day is it today? For the devil, boy, I ask a simple question.
It's Christmas Day, sir.
Don't take me for a fool, boy. Confound it.
But it is, sir. Hear the bells.
You see, Scrooge is still a bit of a git. And he comes in and he's looking in the mirror and he sees chains wrapped around him in the mirror. And he's like, oh, yeah, I've got to start trying to be good. So he goes down and has another word with the boy. He's a lot nicer this time. And he throws a couple of banknotes at the kid to go and get a turkey. He's like, keep the change. No specific figures are offered in this exchange. Then finally, he reads this blooming letter that Belle wrote to him. I could have mentioned a number of times that this letter kept turning up, like Cratchit had it and he dropped it down the back of his desk and then the mice are getting it out. And Scrooge finds it and he puts it in his coat. I'll read it later. And then finally he gets around to reading it. He's like, oh yeah, I'm an arsehole. So he goes out on the street and he buys a big bag of oranges and he's like sharing them out to people as he's walking along. He sees the portly gentleman, they get an orange each. He doesn't give them a donation of any kind, but they do get an orange. So at least there's that. And then there's a trippy bit where we see the Ghost of Christmas Past and the Ghost of Christmas Present again. Don't really need them there, but you know, bring them back. And then it cuts to Belle and she's walking through this empty hospital. They've all gone now, he's got no money. And she starts singing this song. Have a listen.
What if I had never let you go? Would you be the man I used to know? If I'd stayed, if you tried, if we could only turn back time. But I guess we'll never.
So when I was watching this, the wife came in and she's like, I recognise this song. I was like, yeah, it's from this movie. And she's like, no, this was a big hit. I think it was Kate Winslet. I was like, yeah, that's right, it's from this movie. And she goes, no, Kate Winslet released it. It was like to do with a film. I was like, yeah, this blooming film. And she's like, what, this crap? because she hadn't been watching the whole thing. She's watching it thinking, this is pretty rough, because it is. The animation ain't that good. And I was like, yeah, this is the film that song came from. And I remembered when the film came out, this song coming out, it actually got to number 6 on the charts in the UK, which is no mean feat at Christmas time. So then we cut back to Scrooge again. He sees old Joe, and old Joe gives him the money he's got from like chasing down these debts. And Scrooge is like, look, I don't want anything more to do with you. You're an arsehole. You can bugger off. And old Joe's like, what? I'm just doing my job. Oh, you'll get as well. And then Scrooge walks off and he gives the whole bag of money to the blind man. So that was good, I suppose. But then why not give some of it to the portly gentleman? I don't know. Then Belle sees Scrooge and they have a chat. And Scrooge is like, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I read your note. I'm going to change. Oh. Then it cuts to the doctor who's been released. And he goes round to see Tiny Tim. And I think the bit they're trying to suggest here is that Scrooge has written off his debts and he's given money to the hospital, so the doctor's doing a house call to check up on Tiny Tim. So then Cratchit turns up late for work and Scrooge gives it the whole scene about, you know, I'm not going to stand for it. I'm going to increase your wages and make you a partner. And that is the end. And you know what they missed out, boys and girls? At no point does Tiny Tim say, God bless us, everyone. Yeah, that's not in there. So like I mentioned at the start, they have some live action segments. There was a bit at the start and there's also a bit at the end. And I want to play what he says for you. Here it comes. Listen to this.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is the story of A Christmas Carol. Not quite the same one I wrote in the book, I admit.
Yeah, I'll say. A little bit different, mate. Goodness me. Now, like I said earlier, the animation on this ain't great. The acting's fine, I suppose. But when it was released... Now, in one place I read it said it had a budget of 12 million, but in another place I read it was a budget of 6 million. I'm more inclined to believe the 6 million figure. At the box office, this film made $266,475. Yeah, they got it down to the exact dollar. Didn't do well, kids. Did not do well. And I can tell you why it didn't do well. Because it ain't that good. I'm annoyed at so much about it. Like the whole thing with Belle, this was pretty much meant to be a love story. But it wasn't done very well. They changed the story so that it could be a love story. Obviously, we know in the book, Belle goes off and gets married. In this one, she's an attractive woman, but she stays single all her life, holding out for Ebenezer. Just generally a very, very bad version of A Christmas Carol, I'm sorry to say. If you want to check it out, you can. It's on YouTube. Just type in A Christmas Carol, the movie 2001, and you'll see it. But I wouldn't advise it. Now let's do this.
I did something I shouldn't have, and these people called me on it.
You didn't.
That's pretty low, mister. If I had a rubber hose, I would beat you.
Now, boys and girls, this is what I really like. I love it when people send in their stories for me to play. And this one comes from Nettie Tabeau, and it's a story of shame that I hope you all enjoy. Have a listen to this.
Hello, Jack and Total Christmas friends. So this Christmas story of shame took place when I was about 7 years old. It involves my bratty cousin, who was the same age as me, and my stupid cousin, who was 2 years younger than me. We were at my salty food grandma's house the afternoon Christmas Day. My mom and dad and I had already had our Christmas meal at home earlier, so it didn't really matter that much that grandma's food was super salty, but she did make great pumpkin pie, so there was that at least. Anyway, that year, our grandma got us three girls matching jeans with a personalized pocket flap with our names embroidered that snapped onto the jeans. I'm almost certain they were from Sears, so kind of creepy, but it had my name on it. And I have an uncommon name, so I could never find a bicycle license plate or anything cool that was personalized that ever had Nettie on it when I was a kid. So I was pretty happy about my personalized polyester Sears jeans. Then my bratty cousin comes up to my stupid cousin and me and started rubbing our noses in the fact that she was Grandma's favorite, and she had already opened tons of presents from Salty Food Grandma that morning. My stupid cousin decided that it would be a good idea to hide Bratty Cousin's name flap to get back at her. So I went along with her and figured if we were going to hide it, we should hide it well so it wouldn't spoil the plan. Stupid Cousin and I hid Bratty Cousin's name flap behind the toilet in Salty Food Grandma's bathroom. A couple of boring hours later, it was time to go home at last, and Bratty Cousin's mom started having a fit that Bratty Cousin's name flap was missing. So Stupid Cousin decides to fess up and tells our grandma and all of our aunts and uncles that we hid it and showed them where it was. So Bratty Cousin won the day because I'm sure I got a spanking when we got home. Oh, the shame.
You know, there's nothing worse, is there, than when you're committing a crime and then your accomplice just grasses himself up. I've had it happen to me loads of times. It's like, I'd never break under the pressure, but the other person's like, oh yeah, we did it. Oh, it's so annoying as well, because it sounds like her bratty cousin deserved that, really. What's interesting though is, why is she the favourite if she's a brat? Yeah, I was never the favourite, because I was a brat. Anyway, thank you so much for that, Nettie. Absolutely lovely story. Now, boys and girls, we're doing this.
I'm singing, I'm in a store, and I'm singing. I'm in a store, and I'm singing.
Hey! There's no singing in the North Pole.
Boys and girls, this is my annual chat with Scott Newman. Now, terrible story. It was supposed to be Scott Newman and Dwayne from Tinsel Tunes. However, due to the pesky time difference and a breakdown in communication, Dwayne couldn't make it. So it's just me and Scott, which was the first time we did this. It was just me and you. I think that was the only time it's been just me and you, isn't it?
I can't remember. I know we had my old co-host from Jingle Jank on, Jay. He came on with me once. I know I've been here several times. I don't know why I keep coming back, but I do.
Bit rude. Okay, so in previous years, I've played songs for Scott that are popular in the UK, Christmas songs, of course, and he's given his verdict on whether he's even heard them before. Some he had, most he hadn't. I've run out of those. Pretty much there's no more that I could think of that are big in the UK that might not have made it overseas. So this year, we're focusing on one of Scott's favourite British artists. His name's Cliff Richard. Now, a little bit of backstory about Cliff Richard. He is, some would consider, the king of Christmas. He's had 3 Christmas number ones and 4, if you include his part in Band Aid 2. He was born Harry Webb in 1940, which means he's 84 years old. He's still recording, and he's the 3rd best-selling singles artist in UK sales behind the Beatles and Elvis Presley, and then it's him. He's had number ones in 5 decades. That's the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and the 90s, and he nearly made one in the 2000s but didn't quite manage it. Like I said, he's had 3 Christmas number ones, and we're going to be talking about 2 of those today and 2 other Christmas songs that he's had. So, did you even speak, Scott? Have you spoken yet?
No, I haven't spoken.
Do you want to say something?
I'm still grumpy about this because I didn't realize until yesterday that we were talking about Cliff Richard. I thought we were coming on to do something I liked.
Yeah, mistakes were made.
That's okay. I ate something a little dodgy in the back of the fridge this morning, and my stomach has been upset all day, and I've had that weird tickle in my throat, like I might throw up. So I think Cliff Richard could put me over the top and make me feel better. So let's go on.
He's a good guy. He is a good guy, even if you don't love his music.
You sent me 4 links, and I listened to them a bit, and 2 of the songs are ones that you've played for me in the past. And
oh, you remembered that? That's impressive. Oh, gosh, only one of them I've played for you in the past, one I've done on the show.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Well, every time this comes up, you're like Cliff Richard's hype man, and you're like, oh, you got to hear this one. This is so fantastic. And I listen to it, and I'm like, what is this guy thinking?
That's not true at all. I've never hyped him up.
Oh, no, that's not true.
I don't dislike Cliff, but I wouldn't go out of my way for him.
Seriously, though, can you tell me what it is that makes him so appealing? Because I just don't get it.
Okay, so brief history of Cliff. In the 1950s, he was our first sort of rock and roll star before the Beatles came on the scene. The Beatles went into the 60s. He was in the 50s. He was there before anyone else. He had number ones. He was really popular. He's a handsome man, not my type personally, but he was a good-looking guy. The girls loved him. And then he managed to keep that popularity going, which a lot of acts from the 50s didn't manage. He changed his style a bit. He didn't try and compete with the Beatles, really. He did have a sort of fallow period when the Beatles were at their height and he wasn't having number ones. But then he came back in the 70s really strong and had some big, big hits then. In fact, his best-selling singles in the US, I think Devil Woman, and I forget the Power to All Our Friends, it might be this. He had 2 top 10 hits, I think, in the US. And they were pretty much his only hits in the US. Both of those came in the 70s. That was when he had like a real resurgence. Kept it going through the 80s. And then the late 80s, early 90s is when he started his Christmas period. And then after that, it seemed like all the singles he was releasing tended to come out mainly around Christmas time. And by that point, he was a national treasure. And so you either love him or hated him. I'll put it that way. My mum was a big fan. And I think that it's always going to influence how you feel about a musician, how your parents feel about them.
I've got to give him credit because he has managed to navigate these waters and be popular for a very long time, and not many artists can do that. But it still doesn't explain to me why I would like him. And that's the thing, I'm not alone. He's just not that popular in the U.S.
No, not at all. No, he's not.
If I hadn't listened to your show, maybe Mary Britsmith, I would have never heard of the guy.
No.
Actually, you know what? That's a lie. Because I've been listening to Spotify's playlist called Christmas Hits, and they do keep playing one of his songs. And I keep fast-forwarding past that one every time it comes up. And I'm like, son of a gun, why is this thing playing? But then I remembered, you know, Spotify is worldwide. It's not just the U.S.
Oh, that was probably Mistletoe and Wine, which isn't one of the ones we've got on the list today. Do you know what? I've only got four songs because these aren't, well, they're not his most popular ones, although two of them, like I said, did get to number one. But the reason that I wanted to only do four is because I was going to do another four for you next year. Not sure if I'm going to bother now. Think of something else instead.
This is what I'm afraid of, though. I've been on your show numerous times, and that first time, wow, what a bad showing. I had never heard of anything you played for me. Then the next year, I knew a little bit more. And then the next year, I knew a little bit more. And now I kind of like some of these songs. I used to hate Fairy Tale of New York. Now I think it's a pretty
good. What?
I know. Boy, that's not going to make me popular over there. But the song has really grown on me. And now my fear is that all of a sudden I'm going to be a big Cliff Richard fan.
Yeah, I don't think you got to worry about that too much, to be honest.
Okay.
Okay, so this first one, we're going to play a bit for you now.
Your love means more to me than all the fishes swimming in the sea. And like those fishes, my heart begins to swim because I love you, I love you. I want you for my own. I need you near to me more than anyone could ever know.
Now, that wasn't a Christmas-themed song, but that was Cliff's first Christmas number one. A lot of people forget about this one. It was from 1960, and it spent 2 weeks at number one. It was his fourth number one, and it was with Cliff and the Shadows. When he first came out, it was Cliff Richard and the Shadows. That was his backing group. And it was written by the bass player from the band. And what did you think of it?
I didn't find it Christmassy at all. I thought you sent me the wrong link because you sent me a video and I was like, all right, well, maybe the visual will help here. It did not. That one, I stopped it after about 30 seconds. I'm like, I can't listen to this.
I was like, oh, you gave up on it?
Oh, totally gave up on it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, it isn't a Christmas song, but I wanted to play it anyway because, like I said, this was his first Christmas number one and it's the one everyone does forget about. I knew he'd had one in his early career, but I didn't know what the song was. And it's only now that I looked into it, that I found out what it was. So now we know.
Okay, so I'm looking at the video here, and this is obviously young Cliff Richard.
Yeah.
I mean,
so he would have been 20 then.
I was going to say, he looked like he's 15 maybe, and you know, because now he's like 206. So this is a huge contrast to what he looks like now. But he doesn't have that heartthrob look. You said all the girls liked him. I don't know, man. This is, maybe he's just not my type either. I don't know.
I don't know. He's clean cut.
Clean cut, yes. ChatGPT said that was one of the major tentpole reasons that the British like him so much was that he was a clean cut guy.
Yeah, he has always been very clean cut. He's a devout Christian and he's released Christian albums and that. And a couple of the songs we're going to be talking about today have got like a Christian aspect to them.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to move on because like I said, that wasn't a Christmas song. We're going to play the second one. This is from 1989 and this is Whenever God Shines His Light.
God shine a light on me, open up my eyes so I can see. When I look up in the darkest night, then I know everything is gonna be alright. In deep
Okay, tell me about this song, Jack.
So this song was written by Van Morrison and it came out in 1989. It only got to number 20. Now, the reason I wanted to talk about this one is because this was the year after Cliff's biggest Christmas number one, and that was Mistletoe and Wine in 1988. That was the best-selling single of the year when it came out. It spent a good few weeks at number one, and it gets the airplay every single year still. And then the following year, he was trying to get the number one with Van Morrison. Van Morrison's a Christian. Cliff's a Christian. So they released this Christian song. It only got to number 20.
Shocker.
But the Christmas that this was released, Cliff actually was at number one because he was part of the Band Aid 2 single, which was the Christmas number one that year. So even though this single didn't make the heights of the chart, he was at the top anyway.
Okay, a couple notes here from watching this video. First, I had no idea what Van Morrison looked like. Whoa. He makes Cliff Richard look hunky in comparison here. Although Cliff Richard, to his credit, 1989, he kind of looks like Richard Marx. Do you remember that artist?
I remember Richard Marx.
He kind of looks like him.
He would have been nearly 50. He would have been 49.
Jeez, I'm nearly 49. I don't look this good.
They call him the Peter Pan of pop.
Oh, okay.
Because he
Dick Clark
stayed young almost, for so long. He never got married.
Smart.
It keeps you young, I guess, yeah. Never had kids either. That's what ages you.
There's nothing about the song that I like. You mentioned Mistletoe and Wine. If you held a gun to my head and said, right now, I don't know how, let me do an impression of you. Right, pick one of those Cliff Richard songs. I would say, Mistletoe and Wine. That's what I would pick.
Yeah.
But I would absolutely not pick this one.
No, I think it's got some points to it. I do like the intro, the old ding, 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 ding. I like it. But again, sadly, this doesn't get much airplay still. And I would have thought a duet by those two big names would be a much more popular song and would still get the airplay at Christmas, maybe. But no, you don't really hear it. But again, I wanted to play this one because this was when Cliff was trying to get that number one spot again, you see. So not a fan.
Yeah, but if I'm going to listen to Van Morrison, it's going to be Brown Eyed Girl or nothing. I'm not going to pick this song. And I celebrate Christmas more as a secular holiday, so the churchy stuff really doesn't do it for me. And this one feels pretty heavy-handed in that, so I think that was a bit of a turn-off with the song, too.
Yeah, well, that might be why it wasn't so popular. I don't know, but I do like it, and I remember when it came out, and I remember liking it then. Okay, well, now we're going to move on to the third one. Now, you've definitely heard this before, because I've played it to you before, but I wanted to chat about it. So we're going to play this one, and this is Saviour's Day from 1990.
Okay, now that I'm listening to it, this is the song that keeps showing up on the Spotify playlist.
That's this one?
Yes. And my wife happened to be in the garage with me while we were cleaning up something and we were listening to it. And she said, what is this? I said, I don't know. It's this thing Jack keeps trying to get me to listen to. And I knew what it was. I can't just be here and be negative all day long. I really don't like the other songs. But this one's okay-ish, I guess.
See, I actually do like this song. When it came out, I remember it was a very popular song. I only spent 1 week at number one and it pretty much plummeted out of the charts, as Christmas songs do the week after Christmas. It was written by a chap called Chris Eaton, and he is a Christian songwriter. He'd written other Christian songs for Cliff, and he's also written songs that Amy Grant has recorded. And it was filmed at a place called Durdledore in Dorset. Have you seen the video?
Yeah, I'm looking at the video right now with waves crashing on the beach.
Have you seen the arch in the water?
Yeah, I see the arch.
Okay, so Durdledore is quite a famous natural landmark on the south coast of the UK. Durdle apparently means bore, as in to drill. So it's like the door has been drilled into the rock. And it's literally like an arch of rock out in the sea. And I've swum through it once years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's not that far out, to be honest. It's not that big a deal.
You could have lied and made it out to be some real big thing. I wouldn't have known.
Okay, it's miles out to sea. It took me half a day to swim out to it.
Ooh, impressive, Jack.
I went there again about a month ago with the family. We go there every year or every couple of years. You know, we'll pop down if we're in the area. It's a lovely beach. It's a nice walk. And I was going to swim out to it. Now, this was the day before Halloween. So we're talking the 30th of October.
Man, how cold is the water?
Pretty cold, Scott. Okay. Pretty cold. So I went out into the water. And then my wife was already worrying about it. She's already panicking. And my girls were getting nervous as well. We were there with another family. And they didn't care because, you know, they don't give a monkeys about me. So I got into the water and it's quite cold. Now, what I was going to do is swim out to the side of it and then round back through the door. So I was swimming back in rather than swimming out through it and then round the side. And it was cold and I started to get a little bit panicky and I swam out around the back of it and I could see through and my bottle went, Scott, and I didn't do it. I wasn't panicking, but I was just like, and I could have done it. It probably took me longer to swim back the way I'd come than going through the door. But I was looking at the waves going through and I thought, I don't know. I don't know if I do this. I don't think I can do it. So I just swam back the way I came. And at one point, actually, I had to cling onto the rock just to try and get my breath back because I was done in. And in the end, I was just like, I had to do backstroke And I was just sort of sculling my way back in, and it took me ages to get out of the water because I was just, and it wasn't through, it was cold, but it wasn't through like exertion. It was literally just, yeah, I lost my bottle and I'm ashamed of that, but I'm sharing the story with you boys and girls.
Okay. You've used this expression twice here. You lost your bottle?
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I lost it.
We're treading into do you hear what I hear territory here, but I have no idea what you're talking about. I have never heard that expression before.
I don't know where it comes from, actually. Maybe we'll send Bob Baker out on one.
Where's that. Bob Baker?
Yeah, paying attention, Bob.
Bob Baker to the set, please.
Yeah, it just means my courage went. I got scared, pretty much.
Okay. Yeah. At first, I thought you said you bobbled it, and I was like, all right, that sounds kind of British.
Yeah, that's another one. I bottled it. I bottled out. Bottled it. Bobble. Bottled out. Lost
bobble.
His bottle. Bottle.
No, yeah, I'm hearing you, but I'm not understanding you.
You thought I said bobbled it?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, sorry. No, bottle. Yeah. Okay. You bottled it. You bottled out. I lost my bottle. Yeah.
Okay.
I lost my bottle.
Okay. News to me. Here's a question for you, though, Jack. Back to the song.
Okay.
Do you consider this a Christmas song?
Without a doubt, yes.
Okay. I cannot understand that because is there anything mentioned about Christmas in this song?
Well, yeah. The whole thing's about bloody Christmas, isn't it? About Christmas Day, Savior's Day, the day the Savior was born.
Does he specifically mention that, like being born, or is it just saying Savior's Day?
Yeah. He goes like this. He goes, now we have been through the harvest. Winter has truly begun. Now we have been through the chill of the night. We are waiting for the Savior's Day. We're waiting for Christmas Day, but he's calling it Savior's Day. Maybe he could have called it Christmas Day.
He should have called it Christmas Day. Then I would have been on board with this.
Yeah, well, it's written by Chris Eaton, isn't it? And he's like, you know, trying to get his Christian message in there.
Big miss by Eaton there. Okay.
I'm just trying to think if there is any other bit where it does mention Christmas, but I don't think it does at any point. No, you're right.
Yeah. You know, some good Christmas songs are like Frosty the Snowman, Here Comes Santa Claus,
Savior's Day.
Savior's Day. Maybe had Gene Autry sang it, I would have been more on board with it because of my US-centric views, I guess.
Well, yeah, your views on good old Lord Sir, sorry, Sir Clifford of Richard. Richard.
Right, right.
Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about that, because I wanted to talk about the video and Durdledore, because...
Yeah, you wanted to brag about swimming. That's what you wanted to do.
Am I bragging? I lost my bottle. I didn't do it. I didn't swim through it. I've done it once before. I didn't do it then. It was bloody cold. No one else was swimming that day.
Oh, I wouldn't have gone anywhere near it. But you know what? If you want to get your wife off your back about that, do what my wife did. She took out a sizable life insurance policy on me. She'll let me do anything now. It's fine.
I'll do that. Yeah. That's what I'll do. Yep. Good idea. Okay. So the video is really interesting, though, to me, because I live near to this place. It was filmed in September, and they got all these locals from the town down the road, Swanage, and they had to all dress in their winter clothes. And apparently it was quite a warm September day. So yeah, everyone's there sweating buckets in their Christmas clothes.
Oh, they probably didn't mind being splashed by all this water on the rocks here. That's why everybody's smiling, I guess.
Yeah, this was at a time before you weren't allowed to go and climb actually on the rocks. Now a lot of it's cordoned off, so you can't actually climb over onto the top of it. But what's cool is there's signs there that say, beware of Cliff. So there you go. Because you never know, he might come and film another music video there.
That's right. So beware of Cliff and also the drop.
People have died there trying to jump off the top of it into the water.
Well, that really ruined the mood.
Sorry. Well, I was just trying to make myself sound more brave, the guy that bottled it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I wouldn't have even gotten out of the car. So you're way ahead of me.
You would have got out of the car. It's a nice view. It's worth walking down and have a gander at it.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Right. That was a failure again, even though you'd heard that one before, but it is a Christmas song. It does get the airplay, not as much as Mistletoe and Wine, but it does still get a little bit. Now we're going to play our last one we're going to talk about today, and that is 21st Century Christmas.
In this one, I have to admit, this is the most Christmassy, and I don't completely hate it.
What? You don't completely hate it?
No, no. When it started, I heard sleigh bells, and then he mentioned Santa. The video that I pulled up here is from 2006. He mentions mobile numbers. Did people have phone mobile numbers in 2006? I guess they did.
Yeah, it was like late 90s, wasn't it? I'd probably had a mobile by then, and I was a real late comer to the old mobile phone.
Not a terrible song. He started going to the Bethlehem angle, and I was like, oh boy, here we go. So that part wasn't as good. But when it first started, I was like, yeah, that's not bad. So well done. Well done.
Do you remember when I covered it on the show?
No. That's the thing is, there are lots of things that you talk about and it goes in one ear and it goes right out the other. And then I'll email you about it. And you're like, yeah, I covered that on a show. You'd know if you listened. And well, the truth is I listen. You're my favorite podcast. And that's out of all of them.
Really, Scott? Because I've had some pretty shitty episodes.
I think that's what I like so much about it. It's like watching a train wreck in real time.
Yeah, well, I'll give you that.
But honestly, I never remember anything. You could put out an episode from like 2 years ago. It wouldn't be a rerun to me because I sure wouldn't remember it.
I might give that a shot, actually. That's like I can have a fortnight off.
That's not a bad idea. Hey, you should cover those Yule lads.
I hadn't thought about that. That's a good idea. Yeah, I could do that. I could do like one a week in the lead up to Christmas.
Yeah, that's a good idea, huh? No, I like this. Now, the video that I had to watch, because the link you sent me was only available in the UK, this says it's from Top of the Pops 2, a Christmas special from 2006. Boy, he's sweaty and he's in some sort of latex suit. I didn't need to see that. I would have enjoyed the song a whole lot more if it was audio only.
Well, here's the thing. So, like I said earlier, Cliff Richard had number one singles in 5 decades. No one else has done this. And he was trying to get his number one single in the 2000s. This was 2006. Got to number two. Didn't quite make it. Now, I believe this was at the time when The X Factor ruled the Christmas number one. You probably remember me talking about that.
Now that I do.
Yes. For 6 or 7 years, they had the Christmas number one.
If it's mentioned on Merry Britsmas, boy, I'll remember that like it was yesterday.
Yeah, there you go. Merry
Britsmas. I think he talked about that, yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't just go in one ear and come out the other, does it? It sort of hangs around in the middle somewhere.
No, I take notes with Adam.
We all do. It's a great show, yeah.
Oh, here's a question, though. Do you think he was just chasing the number one?
Yes, I do, yeah, definitely. He wanted to have a number one in 6 decades. See, he's had, obviously, chart hits in 6 decades, but he's only had number ones in 5 decades. Yeah. And now he doesn't really hit the charts anymore at all when he releases a single. But you've got to be impressed because we're thinking here, he was 66 years old and he still got the number two.
Oh, he doesn't look 66 in this. He kind of looks like a drowned rat in this latex suit with all the sweat, but he does not look 66.
So you love the latex suit. Why'd you keep going on about it?
That's what I'm wearing. I'm wearing it right now. This is an audio-only medium. You can't see it, but woo, I look good in my teal latex here.
I do like teal. Yeah, well, good choice.
But the thing is, like on Christmas morning, we do a Christmas music battle.
Uh-huh.
So we'll pick a song. And it certainly wouldn't be a Cliff Richard song, but maybe it's like Santa Claus is coming to town. So I got to go find a version that I like. And then Bran will pick a version he likes and we battle it out, see who more listeners vote for. Sometimes there's a version that I really like, but I say, you know what? Nobody's going to vote for this. So then I go and I go find one that I think is going to be popular. And I always kind of wrestle ethically with that. These are the vibes I'm getting from Cliff Richard. He's just trying for a number one here.
Yeah.
He's not doing it for the love of the game. He just wants that number one. And I just find that kind of icky.
Well, I don't know. When you've gone that far, and he almost made it. I say, you know, try and go with what sells. Don't forget, being a Christian, he did put the old Bethlehem stuff in there. There's a lot of Christmas songs that don't mention anything to do with Jesus.
That's true.
He manages stick it in there.
How rich is this guy?
I'm sure he's fabulously wealthy.
He's got to be loaded, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Don't forget, this is nearly 20 years ago, this single, anyway. So, you know.
Yeah.
So he does keep releasing songs now. I don't think he's bothering with the chase and the Christmas number one like he used to.
Yeah, once you miss, the game's over, right?
Yeah, I suppose. It's not consecutive decades. Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. I bet he'd still like another number one, though.
But if he's still trying for it, then we know that his heart's really in it. It's not just for the consecutive because he already blew that one. He cocked it all up.
Well, I guess he did, yeah. But, you know, it was still, this is the annoying thing, I'm sure, to him. Physical sales, it got to number one in the physical singles chart. And I think it was only like a year before that they started including the downloads. So,
I have to imagine that a lot of Cliff Richard's audience is still into the physical media.
I'd imagine. My mum's a fan. She's seen him live.
Grandmothers who are, you know, still wondering about this newfangled CD. And it is, you know, is it going to be around kind of thing? Like, yeah. What is his audience like now? Does he still have new young fans? Or is it just that, oh, my parents used to listen to this and it's a little bit nostalgic for me? Would your girls ever listen to this?
Well, the thing is, this song particularly doesn't get airplay. And I think that's a bit of a shame because I wanted to mention this. It got to number two and it's a Christmas song. And that's pretty impressive because there's lots of other Christmas songs that are regular classics that don't even hit the top 10. Driving Home for Christmas, I think.
Chris Rea, right?
Chris Rea, yeah. Chris Rea.
Yeah. See, look, I learned that from you.
Or maybe from Merry Britsmas.
Yeah, he plays it in the intro, but I learned it from you. Take a compliment, Jack, for God's sakes.
Thanks for the compliment. Yeah, this one, like I say, got to number two, doesn't get the airplay, doesn't get the rotation at all. Like, I hadn't heard it until I went looking for it when I covered it earlier this year or last year or whenever I covered it. But the problem Cliff's had is there's a lot of backlash against him, especially for like Radio 1, which is our most popular station for younger people in the UK. Like, it's a BBC station. And he was releasing songs and Radio 1 just refused to play them. So he wasn't getting the airplay.
Oh, here's a question for you. And we might have something for next year on this. Do modern artists cover these songs?
No.
Yeah, I didn't. I was hoping you were going to say yes. Like, all right. We'll hear Ed Sheeran singing Savior's Day, and then we'll play that for Scott next year, and we'll see if I like it. I guess we can't do that.
No, I don't think any of his songs get the covered versions, no. But Mistletoe and Wine, his biggest one, that's not actually an original by him, though. That's from a musical.
What musical?
You know the one.
Oh, yeah, Cats.
Okay, I'll have to cut it in here somewhere. I can't really remember. When I hear the name, I'll know it. It's not a really popular musical, but it's like a...
Let's see. The song was written by Jeremy Paul, Leslie Stewart, and Keith Strachan for a musical called Scraps.
Oh, I wouldn't have got that.
No, not at all. Which was an adaptation of Hans Christian Andersen's Little Match Girl.
That's right. Yeah, I knew it was something to do with Little Match Girl. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay, well, those are the four I wanted to play for you this year. Obviously, you're a huge fan of all of them, and they'll be going on your playlist, I'm sure.
Yeah, okay. So if I had to pick one to add to a playlist, like you were forcing me... Maybe I'd pick 21st Century Christmas.
Yeah, that's funny because, like I say, the only one that gets the airplay still is Savior's Day. So, yeah, out of those four at least.
Yeah, and you played that one for me in a previous year. I remember hearing it.
Yeah.
But it still doesn't do much for me. But 21st Century Christmas, at least it mentions Santa Claus.
And that's what makes a Christmas song.
Yeah, I like that part of it, you know, jingle bells and such, but... He's just not my thing. It's just one of those things that makes me scratch my head about British people. Like, same thing with why you like beans on toast. I just don't get it.
They like beans on toast? What?
I don't like soggy toast, Jack. What? I don't get why you guys eat that.
Okay, well, if you're going to insult my culture, we'll end it there.
Insult your culture.
You want to plug your podcast for us, Scotland?
Yeah. Well, right now I'm doing Christmas morning daily. So we're between November and Christmas, we do an episode every weekday. And boy, is that a lot of work. But it's worth it. And maybe you want to come over and listen to that. I promise you, no Cliff Richard over there. Not nary a once have we ever played something like that.
You're not selling it, Scott. You're not selling it.
Nope. And I also do Tinsel Tunes with Dwayne.
Yeah, Dwayne Bailey.
Who was supposed to be here today. And I don't know, he got lucky and got out of this somehow.
You should check out both of those podcasts, boys and girls, because they're blinding. I start listening to, actually, I'll start tomorrow, it'll be, for Christmas morning, because I wait till December.
Oh, that'd be cool. I rip off your jokes all the time, but every time I do, I give you credit.
Oh, is that true? You do?
Yeah, and one of our listeners is from the UK, and she sent me the Christmas joke toilet roll.
The one I had?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What are you done with it?
Boy, have you ever accidentally used that stuff?
No, I don't know where it is.
It is awful. My daughter thought it would be hilarious to put it in my bathroom, and she did, and she took out the good roll. So I was trapped.
So you had to use it?
I had to use it. They put all their effort into the joke part. I can tell you that for certain.
And they didn't put a lot of effort into that either.
No, because they repeat. You don't have to spin that roll very far to end up on the repeats.
I was surprised at how far I did have to spin it, though, to be honest.
Okay. Maybe I got the more recent version where they've cutting costs or something.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming on then, Scott. We'll speak to you again next year, if not before.
Thank you for having me, Jack.
Book review, book review.
Christmas.
Book review!
So boys and girls, I don't know if you remember, but last week I was offering to give away a book. It's the unofficial Elf Cookbook by Britton Taylor, and it is loaded with recipes based around the movie Elf. Yeah, I'm going to read the blurb again for you lucky people. From the Candy Cane Forest to the Lincoln Tunnel, the unofficial Elf Cookbook is here to help you celebrate Christmas in true Buddy the Elf style. Relive your favourite moments inspired by the cult classic holiday movie with 75 recipes, ranging from appetizers and main dishes to refreshing drinks and desserts. Get your fill of the four main food groups: candy, candy canes, candy corns, and syrup, with Arctic Puffin Pancakes, Mr. Narwhal's Savoury Tusk Twists, Papa Elf's Pot Pies, Son of a Nutcrackle Candy Bars, Elves Merrymaking Milkshots, and more. So if you want to get a copy, like I said, it's the unofficial Elf Cookbook by Britton Taylor, and it's on Amazon. And this copy I've got in my hands is going to go out to a lucky listener. Now, I have my beautiful assistant. Her name is...
Robin.
She is one of the stars of the incredibly popular, and when I say popular, not very popular, podcast, I'm Not Complaining, with Robin and Juno. Juno picked out the name from the hat for the last competition. Robin, you're picking out the name from the hat this time.
Yes.
Have you been practicing picking names out of hats?
No.
Why not?
Because I didn't know I was doing this till
this
today.
This is serious, though. This is serious stuff. You've got to practice. I've been practicing for months just to watch you do it. So you should definitely be practicing picking it out. Okay, sorry, folks. We've got an amateur doing it today, but give it your best shot, Robin. Right, are you going to stir them around or are you just going to grab one?
Stir
them around then. Stir.
I'm stirring.
Okay, you happy with that?
Yeah.
They're stirred. Right, I'm going to hold it out for eyesight so you can't see. So you've got to reach up and in. Okay, got one?
Yep.
Right, read it out into the microphone.
The winner is Mary Pulte.
So congratulations, Mary.
Congratulations.
So hopefully by the time this episode comes out, I'll already have that book in the post to you. You would have received my email. Everyone else that entered, there's quite a lot of people that put their names forward. Everyone else, if you still want a copy, you can pick one up on Amazon or, you know, not. Your choice. Anything you want to say, Robin, about your podcast?
I think it's very good.
Is that it? Tell them what it's called again.
It's called I'm Not Complaining with Robin and Juno. And it's out every week.
What sort of interesting topics do you cover in your podcast, Robin?
What we've done over the weeks, we do book reviews, we do interviews with some people, and we do jokes and...
Well, I think the most highbrow bit that everyone really wants to know about, Robin, is farty facts.
Oh yeah, we do farty facts and we read a book of fart facts.
So there you go, boys and girls. Why not check out I'm Not Complaining with Robin and Juno. Thank you, Robin. I bet there's someone out there that thinks you've done a fantastic job of picking out the name. Who do you think that is?
Mary Pulte.
Of course. Congratulations, Mary. Now it's time for this. Say goodbye, Robin.
Bye-bye.
This is the quiz. This is the quiz. Here it is, boys and girls, the moment you've all been waiting for. It is, of course, the quiz. Now, I've got to start off by saying that last episode, yes, I did forget to give an answer to one of the questions. I was informed about this by my dear friend and US correspondent, Scott Newman, who is going to be on later in the show, or might have already been on in the show. I don't know what order I'm doing things in this week. Anyway, he emailed me to let me know I hadn't given one of the answers. It was, of course, the McDonald's question. I did sort it out, but that was about 12 hours after the podcast went out. So if you subscribe, you might not have got the answer to that question. Anyway, these are the scores that people scored in the last episode. With 5 points, we had Pamela Wooten, Andy FRM, don't know what that means, Frank Talley, Benji Pearson, Dan W, and Jeff Malcolmson. Sorry, mentioning Jeff Malcolmson. Jeff's actually been on the show, and he is the creator of a comic strip called Santa and Rudy. Now, if you're not following Santa and Rudy, you should do. He's on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Go and have a look. It's a lovely strip, especially this time of year, of course, because it features Santa and Rudy. So if you're not already checking it out, check it out. I'll try and remember to put a link in the show notes for you, but I shouldn't need to. Just Google Santa and Rudy. Rudy spelled R-U-U-D-Y. With 6 points was Nettie Tebow, and she's going to be on the show later on, and Mike Westphal, the host and creator of the Advent Calendar House, and he's going to be here in a minute with his answers for this episode's quiz. Yeah, that's right. With 7 points, we had Scott Newman. Thanks again, Scott, for sorting me out there. Martin Goodman and Dan Coulson. Now, Dan Coulson, back in the early days of the show, Dan Coulson was on the show. He sent me a story. But also, he is the creator of Burly Boards, and he does incredible woodwork stuff. If you go on Facebook and search Burly Boards, you'll find his page, and he creates wonderful wooden things. And he sent me a chopping board. We've still got it. We hardly ever use it, but we've got it on display because it's so lovely. So, yeah, if you're looking for a bespoke gift to get someone as Christmas, you probably left it a bit late, but you never know, maybe drop him an email. Well done for getting 7, Dan. Also, we've got Wayne Clark. Now, Wayne Clark, he's the presenter of Christmas Alphabet podcast, and that was a couple of years ago now that it ran, but it was really good. And if you haven't checked it out, well, it's got all the episodes on there now. Each episode's a different letter of the alphabet talking about Christmas, so you can go and check that one out. Yeah, Wayne Clark's Christmas Alphabet, he scored 7. And with 8 points matching me was Jamie Robertson, and Jamie's from the UK, so maybe that's why his score was so good, because it was a bit UK centric. Well done, Jamie, for that. Anyway, that's enough about the previous episode's quiz. We've got to do this episode's quiz. All right, I'm doing it. Question number one. What in France is an arbre de Noël or un sapin de Noël? Now, I did my best French accent there, so I may well have nosed that up, but you get the idea. Question two. What common Christmas items require a mix of silver fulminate and potassium chlorate to make your Christmas go with a bang? And it's not Brussels sprouts, you dirty boy. Okay, question number three. Results of a YouGov survey revealed that 77% of children leave what out for Father Christmas's reindeer on Christmas Eve? What are they leaving out? It's an easy one, isn't it? Easy one. Question number four. Who are the two stars of the 2008 film Four Christmases? Yeah, so there's a lot of famous people in that one, but who are the two main stars in that one? Okay, who are they? Tell me, please. I want to know. I already know, actually. Question whatever. What name is given to the system of present giving in workplaces, etc., whereby the givers are supposed to remain anonymous? Or some would say they're supposed to remain a secret. Goodness me. You would have got that without me giving you a hint. Question, I don't really care the numbers. It's that numbers aren't important. They are important for some things, but not this thing. In which 1989 rom-com film can Meg Ryan be seen buying a large Christmas tree and then struggling in the street trying to get it home as Bing Crosby's Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas plays on the soundtrack? What film's that? Eh? Right. Question, I don't care. In the novel Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Harry gets an anonymous Christmas present. Actually, it's from Sirius Black, called Firebolt. What is Firebolt? Easy enough, innit? Question, oh no, yeah. In 1992, Darlene Love had a hit with which song that featured in the film Home Alone 2, Lost in New York? Okay, any ideas? Love that song, it's good. Best known for his legal thrillers, who wrote the 2001 comedic novel Skipping Christmas? And this is the final one, okay? Last question. Which decorative plant has the scientific name Ilex aquifolium? There you go. That was your 10 questions. Now, I have a special guest to give you the 10 answers. Let's go. Okay, boys and girls, I thought that this young gentleman had been on to do the quiz with me before, but alas, he hasn't. So this is Mike Westphal from the Advent Calendar House's first attempt at the quiz. What do you normally score, Mike? 10?
Oh, usually 12? No. I got 10 maybe once.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Oh, I remember I emailed you the one time I got a 10. Yeah.
I remember the email. I remember the email.
Usually I average about a 6 or a 7.
Seems like, well, 7's good. 6 seems like your average listener was getting that. When I read out in the latest episode, when we're recording this, it was the latest episode. I think 4 or 5 people had sent in their scores, and 4 had got 6 and 1 had got 5.
All right.
So if you're getting 6, that's pretty decent. That'll do. Right.
Okay.
So we're going to go straight in. Question number one. What in France is un arbre de Noël or un sapin de Noël?
That's a Christmas tree.
How did you know that? Was it a guess?
No, I took French in high school, so... Oh, yeah. I don't remember most of it because no one here speaks French, but the arbor is what tipped me off there.
Yeah, well done.
Noël is French for Christmas.
See, I studied French when I was at school, but I didn't remember that arbor means tree, but I know that arbor refers to trees because like I was a tree surgeon for a while, and that's also called an arboriculturalist. Or arboricultural is study of trees or whatever. Okay, question number two. What common Christmas items require a mix of silver fulminate and potassium chlorate to make your Christmas go with a bang?
It's got to be a Christmas cracker, right?
Yeah, it should say go with a crack, but that wouldn't make sense, would it?
No, that would be a little too obvious.
Yeah. Okay, next question. This is an easy one. Results of a YouGov survey revealed that 77% of children leave what out for Father Christmas's reindeer on Christmas Eve?
A carrot.
Yeah, people always say like it's a carrot for Rudolph. And I always think, well, buddy, ever ate?
What about the other reindeer? Well, and ours, like, they only leave out one carrot. I'm like, they all have to share the one carrot?
Yeah, I'm figuring they're getting their carrots elsewhere. I imagine.
I guess you're right. Yeah, Father Christmas if they're given...
He's a generous guy. House. He likes to make sure things are even, which is why the rich kids get loads of good presents and the poor kids also get loads of really good presents.
That's right.
Okay, I know you struggled with this one. So can you tell me, who are the two stars of the 2008 film Four Christmases?
Is this the one with Ben Affleck and James Gandolfini?
No, that is Surviving Christmas.
Surviving Christmas. Who's Four in Four Christmases? Four Christmases
is Reese Witherspoon and Vince Vaughn.
Okay. Yeah, never saw that.
Did you know? It's Four Christmases because both of their parents have split up, you see. So
okay.
Yeah, so they have to go to each of their parents. It's quite a cast, actually, because Robert Duvall's in it and Mary Steenburgen.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, there's a few in it. It's worth watching. It's all right. I didn't mind it. I didn't love it. I didn't mind it. Okay. Question number whatever. What name is given to the system of present giving in workplaces, etc., whereby the givers are supposed to remain anonymous?
The Secret Santa.
Right. That is the correct answer. But also, get this, right? I've also got Bran Tub.
Bran Tub?
Bran Tub. Yeah, what's that?
I've never heard that word.
I'm going to have to Google that, and then I'll say something about it.
Bran Tub.
That's what it says. Secret Santa or Bran Tub. Yeah. Okay. In which 1989 rom-com film can Meg Ryan be seen buying a large Christmas tree and then struggling in the street trying to get it home as Bing Crosby's Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas plays on the soundtrack?
Is this When Harry Met Sally?
Well done, Michael. Yes.
Oh, thank goodness.
Well done,
I remember the New Year scene in that, so I thought that was going to trip me up, but good.
Next one. I think this is an easy one. In the novel Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Harry gets an anonymous Christmas present, actually it's from Sirius Black, called Firebolt. What is Firebolt?
It's a broom. It's a flying broom.
Yeah, it is a flying broom. I'll tell you what, if it weren't a flying broom and it was just a broomstick, that'd be a crap present for a 12-year-old.
It sure would. Yeah, clean your room, kid.
Yeah. Okay, oh no, this one tripped you up, didn't it? In 1992, Darlene Love had a hit with which song that featured in the film Home Alone 2, Lost in New York in the same year? There's a clue in the name of that film.
A clue in the name of the film?
Mm.
I only can think of the other Darlene Love song that everybody knows, Christmas Baby Please Come Home.
Yeah, it's All Alone at
All
Christmas.
Alone at Christmas.
Nobody wants to be all alone at Christmas.
I mean, I hear it now that you sang it. But
yeah, because I got great singing. It's not. Me. Yeah, it doesn't get the most airplay. It's nice. I like it.
I mean, Darlene Love has never done a bad Christmas song.
No, she's great. Mm-hmm. The Queen of Christmas.
Sure is.
Do you remember the big thing with the Queen of Christmas? Did you ever read about that or hear about that?
With Mariah Carey?
Yeah, that's right.
Darlene Love's the Queen of Christmas.
In my eyes. Okay.
That's right.
Mariah Carey's had one Christmas hit, and that's it.
One Christmas hit, and I mean, she's great. She's wonderful. She's apparently got another one coming out this year.
Oh, so is she? We'll see.
That's what she said.
Yeah, good luck with that. Okay, right, here we go then. Is this the last one? No, it's not. Hold on.
I think I got two more.
Yeah. Best known for his legal thrillers, who wrote the 2001 comedic novel Skipping Christmas?
this is mostly a guess because I don't remember the author of Skipping Christmas, but you said a legal thriller, so I'm going to guess John Grisham.
Oh!
Did I get it?
You got it!
Well
done!
Wow!
Yes, John Grisham. So the novel Skipping Christmas, they changed the name of the film to Christmas with the Cranks.
Christmas with the
because
Cranks.
Because of the one you mentioned earlier, Surviving Christmas, because they were worried it was too similar to Surviving Christmas, Skipping Christmas. So they changed the name to Christmas with the Cranks. And interesting aside, my first ever Christmas book review I did on my show, on this show, was Skipping Christmas.
Skipping Christmas.
Okay, this is the final one. Which decorative plant has the scientific name Ilex aquifolium?
Is that a poinsettia?
No, Ilex is a holly.
Well, that gives me 7 out of 10 again.
7's good, though.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, let's just work out how many I got. It's going to take a while to add all these up. Oh, 10. Yes, I got 10.
You got all 10?
I did get 10, but yeah, the thing is I cherry-picked them a bit for this week because I thought...
Did you? Because you had a guest.
I had a guest, yeah, and I didn't want you being... How's anyone supposed to know that? Now I've got someone here, I've got a look in their eyes as I read the questions out to them. It's not a problem when people... I can't see the people that I'm punishing with the awful questions.
Yeah.
But now you're here, I feel like I don't want to watch a grown man cry.
Well, thank you for throwing me a bone there.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I suppose if you're not... me being a gardener... I guess that's why I know what an Ilex is. What was the other two you got wrong now?
The Darlene Love one, I just couldn't think of the other name of the song. And then the Four Christmases movie, which I hadn't seen.
Yeah, that's on me. That surprised me. That was a big movie when it came out. When it came out, it was. It made a lot of money, I think.
Okay.
I'd say that was sort of the peak of Vince Vaughn's powers, wasn't it? Around then.
The Vince Vaughn Christmas movie I think of is Fred Claus.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I've watched it a couple of times, and I don't know. I think the best bit about the whole thing is the Tom Petty song "Christmas One" is playing at the start.
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah,
that's in Home Alone. Is that the first? No, that's in Home Alone too.
Is it? I thought the first time I'd ever heard that was on Four Christmases. But obviously
no, that's
because I've watched Home Alone too. So.
Yeah, it's when they're driving into the city.
Oh,
you see them like the bridge. Am I thinking of the right movie? Is it Home Alone too? One of the Home Alones. I think it's New York. I think it's one of the bridges.
I'm trying to remember how the song goes now. So the din 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 din.
Christmas.
Oh, all over
again.
Yeah, again. It hardly gets any airplay over here, and it should because such
a really
good
tune. I love that song.
Really good song. It's on my playlist.
Oh, yeah.
I get to hear it. Well, 7 out of 10. That's respectable. So do you want to tell everyone about your show? For us, please, Sam?
Yeah, go to the Advent Calendar House. The website is adventcalendar.house. It's my salute to all holiday specials, but mostly the Christmas ones. Jack's going to be on for 2 episodes this season. I'm excited for that.
Two boys and girls, 2.
Glad to have you on.
Yeah, I love the Advent Calendar House. I'd plug it at least once a year, if not twice. Thanks for coming on, Mike. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Jack. This was great.
Cool. Well, maybe again next time then. Take care, buddy.
All right. Thanks a lot.
So boys and girls, it's Christmas now, so my 2 recommendations are The Advent Calendar House, hosted by Mike Westphal, you heard him earlier on the quiz, and also Tinsel Tunes and the Christmas Morning Podcast, both hosted by my friend Scott, who was there chatting about his favourite singer, Cliff Richard. Check out both their podcasts, they're really easy to find, and if you're listening to Christmas Morning, you get one every single day, you lucky people. Yeah, so that's Advent Calendar House, Tinsel Tunes, and the Christmas Morning Podcast. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. Thanks to everyone who's been a part of it. Now, I forgot to remind you during the quiz, so I'm reminding you now, boys and girls, send me your score and I'll read it out in the next episode. It's very simple. It's one number. Put it in an email to totalchristmas@gmail.com and I'll read it out in the next episode. Now, the next episode is going to be in about another 10 days. I'm trying to fit 3 in December, so you should be getting that soon. If you're not subscribing, then you might miss it. Well, you won't miss it, I suppose. Just, go and find it eventually. Do what you've got to do. But if you do subscribe, you'll get it when it comes out. Anyway, I'll be back again then. In the meantime, I love you. Merry, happy Christmas.